celebrating classics and creating new ones. Only on the Music Vibes Podcast. Now, here's your host, DC Hendrix.
All right, welcome into the Music Vibes Podcast. I am your host, DC Hendrix. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, however you get your favorite podcast. Go ahead and make us one of your favorites. And while you're there, go ahead and scroll on down and leave us a review. Last week had a great episode where we kind of talked about the greatest music of the 50s, 60s, and 70s and the book Moments in Time. And this week we got a big, big, big podcast I'm very excited about. Always love talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I just discovered this article that was on Spin's website, and I look at the author of this article, and it just so happens to be a great guy that I follow on Twitter, friends with on Facebook, the great writer, the one and only Al Shipley, joining the podcast today. What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Is this the first time having you on or not?
No, yeah, we talked about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think, a couple of years ago.
Wow. Time flies. So. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that podcast was very lengthy because Rock and Roll of Fame is always a fun discussion on this podcast. I've given it a rest, I promise. So today we're talking Red Hot Chili Peppers. So before we even get started, obviously, I want to dig into this article that you got on Spin. So obviously, I know that editors are the ones that usually come up with these articles, but your first thoughts, you got an assignment, you get to write about the Red Hot Chili Peppers albums and rank them. Your first thoughts when you got that assignment?
Oh yeah, so basically this year we kind of started doing mostly me writing a lot of these, ranking every album and artist discography. So I've been doing like one a month for most of the year, like I did like Neil Young and David Bowie, a lot of artists with a lot of albums. And so my editor Daniel Cohn was like, when the Chili Peppers dropped the one album in April, he asked me to do that. So I wrote that in April, and then when they released that kind of surprise Return of the Canteen Dream last month, I guess he said, hey, can we update it and put that in the ranking too? So we went ahead and, you know, checked out the new album and figured out. And then to my surprise, because, you know, usually when an artist drops two albums back to back, you kind of think, oh, the second one's going to be kind of the B-sides one. It's kind of going to be the one that's less urgent, gets less attention. And I turned out to like this newer one more, and I ranked it ahead of the one they dropped earlier in the year, Love Unlimited.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So the new albums, obviously you're referring to the Return of the Dream Canteen, the new album that they just released October 14th. And then, as you mentioned earlier this year, they released Unlimited Love, which was released in springtime, April 1st, 2022. So yes, 100% in agreement. Return of the Dream Canteen kind of brought me back to some of the old school, and I'm sure we'll agree on this, and you alluded to it in your article and explained why you had this ranked higher. And it is, I think we share the same thought where we were kind of brought back to the old school, I guess I would say 90s Red Hot Chili Peppers vibes.
Yeah, and it seemed like there was like, because they have a reference to Funky Monks from Blood Sugar Sex Magik in the first song, and they have, I think, a reference to Brothers Cup in another song. So it kind of feels like they were looking back a little bit, and it's cool.
And there's no better way to start that album than Tip of My Tongue.
Well, I'm an animal, something like a cannibal, a very flammable and partially programmable.
Strong way to start the album. But with the new album, before we even talk about some of the classics, what were some songs that stood out to you? For me, it was Tip of My Tongue and Peace and Love, which I'm all about, by the way. Those were my two top songs, and just so happened to be the first two songs on the album.
Yeah, but I really liked, you know, the songs where I felt like there were great guitar solos, like, you know, the Eddie Van Halen tribute, Eddie.
Thank you.
like an Eddie Van Halen style solo, but still you could tell like John Frusciante was like putting an effort into that solo, and there are some really cool, you know, guitar sounds on this album.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're talking about the rankings though, so I guess we got to start, you know, I got a bone to pick a little bit. While these rankings were fantastic and pretty much we're in agreement on most of it. But I will say the one and only album that I thought could have been ranked a little higher, which we're talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers here. You know, they're, I mean, at least the way I look at them, one of the best of my generation, obviously. So many great albums here. But one album that I feel like gets a little bit too much criticism and a lot of people hate on it, which admittedly, yes, no John on this album, but The Getaway in 2016. I really loved that album. I know John was not on there, but I thought there was some great, great songs on there. And I know the production was great. Gnarls Barkley, Gorillaz. I mean, the band, I mean, this album was still really good. So what made you list The Getaway so low at number 12?
Well, and you know what? It's interesting because I actually got to interview Joshua Klinghoffer last year, and we didn't talk too much about the Chili Peppers, but he's a really interesting guy. And, you know, now he's playing with Pearl Jam and he has this great solo project, Floor One. I think he's a really, you know, especially now that he's out of the Chili Peppers and he only did two albums with them, he's kind of underrated because he's such a brilliant guy in his own right. And he did a great job of kind of coming in for those years that Frusciante wasn't there. And I would just say, I just think it's the weaker of the two albums he did, but I do respect that, like, he had worked with Danger Mouse because he was a part of like Gnarls Barkley's live band. And I think there was some chemistry there and he was just trying to bring in something new and, you know, do something besides record with Rick Rubin again. And I respect the spirit of the album, but like, I just didn't think like the drums sounded good. And like Danger Mouse is not like a guy who captures room sounds really brilliantly. He's a guy who's great with samplers and drum machines and stuff. So for me, it's like, Chad Smith was the one who was ill-served on that album, I feel like, where, like, his drums just didn't hit like they should. But, I mean, it was a cool album. There's some pretty interesting stuff on there. It just, I didn't regard it as, like, a successful experiment entirely. It was just, but they were trying something new, which was pretty cool to see for a band that had been around for, like, 30 years at that point.
Yeah, you did a great job with these rankings. I think that was the only album where I would have ranked a lot higher on mine. Because The Getaway, I love the opening track, The Getaway.
That's right, you're right. We will do our thing tonight, all right. Take me through the future. It's time you'll find just another color-coded crime. Incision and a suture. You told my friend we would get it on no matter when. A super cavitation. Let's go. You show me something no one will ever know. A love hallucination. Another lonely super.
Longest Wave and Goodbye Angels, my top four from that album. Loved it. But that was my only bone to pick. I mean, other than that, you did really well. But I wanted to highlight a couple of the albums in particular that I think, you know, everyone knows Californication. You know, everybody talks about, you know, obviously Blood Sugar Sex Magik. Everybody talks about those. We'll get to those eventually. But one album that you ranked high that I think really deserves more appreciation was the Uplift Mofo Party Plan. Kind of allude to why you ranked that one so high.
I mean, and as I say in the article, it's really their only album with the founding lineup because the only one with Jack Irons on it, and it's one of only two albums with Hillel Slovak on it. And, you know, you kind of forget that, you know, it was those four guys that started the band with Anthony and Flea. And so it's just great to hear that. And I feel like they're all firing on all cylinders. And, you know, they were kind of underdogs in the 80s. They weren't selling records yet. But they had, and you know, you think about rap rock becoming kind of this big thing in the 90s and the 80s, it was kind of like them and the Beastie Boys and not a lot of other people putting those sounds together really confidently and really like putting themselves out there and saying, okay, we can do these two things together as a sound. So it's, I think it's just a really cool album. I think it's their best 80s album. And it really kind of shows where like they were they were not a novelty. They were sticking around. They were like, we're going to keep getting better every album, that kind of attitude. So. Mm-hmm.
So was this around the time, I know they were doing stuff with George Clinton. Was this around that time?
I think Freaky Styley before that is the one they did with George Clinton. And that one's a really cool album that has like, you know, like Maceo Parker and has like a Sly Stone cover. That one's a really cool one too. And again, it's like, you know, because we had so little music with Hillel Slovak, where you only have to do two albums with them before he passed. So it's like, It's great to savor those and say, okay, he's the guy who really built the sound. And Frusciante kind of took it to a new place when he came in, but he joined the band because he idolized Hillel Slovak. So, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, and with ranking these albums, I'm sure it was very tough, you know, finding out where exactly to put which album. And one album that I think another place you put absolutely perfect that I was hoping would be in the top five was Mother's Milk, another album you mentioned in the 80s. Okay. And this was around a time, I believe, where, and I think you even mentioned this in your article, there was some very significant, unfortunate deaths in rock music around this time. I think it was even before they released this album. And then I think this is where the Red Hot Chili Peppers, at least in my eyes, started to kind of, you know, get more mainstream, I guess, so to speak, with Mother's Milk. But it includes a song called Pretty Little Ditty. Obviously was later on sampled by a song called Butterfly.
Come my lady, come my lady, you're my butterfly, sugar baby. Come my lady, come my lady, you're my butterfly, sugar baby. Such a sexy pretty little thing
that I grew up on. I knew as soon as I heard it that I knew it was a Red Hot Chili Peppers sample and made me like it even more. But Mother's Milk, released in 1989, you had that at number four. Kind of talk about that album a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great one, too. And it's funny because when you do these rankings, it's funny because sometimes my editor will be like, well, you know, let's not do an artist if the fans are all going to hate what we rank. And but I'm kind of, my attitude is, you know, it's all about getting the conversation started. And it's rare that, especially if you're ranking like more than 10 or 20 albums by some artist that's been around forever, no one's going to agree with you 100%. What I like to see is like when people say, okay, there's this one album I love that you underrated, like you said with the Getaway. So I kind of feel like it's one of those things where if someone has just one or two quibbles where like, then I kind of feel like I got it right because that means they can just focus on one thing that I got wrong in their eyes or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Mother's Milk is really, really awesome. And again, like, because it's the first one with John Frusciante and Chad Smith, so it's kind of like You're getting the classic lineup that everyone knows them for. And like, I think Higher Ground was the first time a lot of people heard the band. And it's interesting because like you said, with the Crazy Town sample, like, Chili Peppers, as much records as they've sold, they've never had a number one song. They got kind of close with Under the Bridge, but Crazy Town got to number one with the Chili Peppers sample, and That's kind of like the only rap rock number one song, like unless you count like Lose Yourself by Eminem. That's like the only like, you know, kind of rap rock band doing a hip-hop fusion kind of thing song that ever got to number one on the Hot 100. So it's like they were, even though they never had a number one, they still were part of one, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of number one, my number one was actually your number five. So, and obviously, it's all personal preference. I mean, we all love the albums. We all have our own opinions. But my personal, while I don't think it's the best, I agree that your number one is the best album. Blood Sugar Sex Magik is their best album of all time. I agree that. But my personal favorite album is your number five, which you had Stadium Arcadium.
When I saw you,
think I appreciated this album as much as I do now. You know, we all grow up, things change, our music taste changes a little bit. And I think that's kind of the same case with me, because Stadium Arcadium has become my favorite album. I mean, there's, for me, like, there's hits all the way across Stadium Arcadium, and a lot of them grew on me. Like, I remember hearing Hey-O for the first time, you know, when it first came out in 2006. I didn't like it. Now that I'm, you know, 30-plus years old, that's one of my favorite songs on the album. And then you mentioned, you know, the self-titled song, Stadium Arcadium. I mean, you got, there's so many songs on it. Make You Feel Better. Great album. 2006, they released Stadium Arcadium. What made you put that at number five?
I mean, I think, you know, it definitely, it being a double album, and I think it got nominated for Album of the Year at the Grammys, it was a huge record for them. So, yeah, I felt like it had to be in there. But just for me, it's like, you know, they're a band that has not made a lot of short albums. I think, you know, since the 90s, I think they maybe have two albums that are under an hour long. So it's one of those things where I'm kind of a classic, you know, a great album can be, you know, fit on one 12-inch vinyl record, like 40, 45 minutes. And if you're going above that, you know, a couple times in your career, maybe do a double album. That's cool. So, like, Stadium Arcadium is a double CD, and they filled those CDs. That is a very long album. So, for me, it's kind of like, you know, and I compared it to, it's actually a little longer than Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness by Smashing Pumpkins, which is also a double CD. Very long album. And that album, I think, Smashing Pumpkins double album, is like a little more varied. They have more experimentation. Whereas, like, Stadium Arcadium, I feel like, one of my favorite albums that's a double album is White Album by the Beatles. And same thing, where it's like, I want to hear experimentation. I want to hear you go all the way out there and do some strange new stuff. So for me, it's like Stadium Arcadium. I would like it more if they did weird stuff in the double album. They used all that space to, like, really try something new. Where to me, it's like that album has, you know, kind of the same mix of sounds you get on, like, Californication or By the Way, you know?
Got you. Very well said. Al Shipley joining us here on the podcast. And of course, we're talking Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I guess I wanted to ask you this earlier, but obviously, Rashante joining the group once again after a little bit of a hiatus. I know he had the solo years, a couple of hits actually in those solo years, at least from my personal perspective. But, you know, he's back in the group now. So your first initial thoughts as a Red Hot Chili Pepper fan? Obviously, for me, my first thought was, when's the tour dates? That was my first thought. I'm ready. Where's the tour dates? Where you come? Where you going? And then I looked at ticket prices and immediately was humbled. wished for a better year in 2023, and hoping for another album and hoping for another tour. Because quickly my bank account definitely talked to me after checking some of the tour date prices. But your first thoughts when Frusciante joined the group once again?
Yeah, it's interesting because you don't have a lot of situations like this where someone kind of comes and goes in a band. This is his third time in the band. He, you know, was there for a few years. They got huge with him, and then he left. And then it was a huge surprise when he came back for Californication. And obviously they had kind of a real great run with him several albums in a row, and then he left again. And now it kind of feels like you wonder, is he here to stay, or is it going to be like this forever, where it's like he comes back for a couple albums, leaves again? Because, I mean, you know, being in a huge band like that, I think a lot of people are not built for that. I think Flea is built to do that his entire life, but a lot of people are probably like, you know, yeah, they don't want to do a stadium tour, you know, every couple of years for their entire life. So I get that Frusciante is like a unique talent. He's probably very kind of sensitive temperament, kind of quiet guy. So it's cool that he came back, and amazingly, you know, I think the two albums released this year is even more music than Stadium Arcadium. Like, you know, it's two, like, 73, 75-minute albums. It's insane how much music they put together. Obviously, they had a little more time with the pandemic, I think, where they might have just finished one of these records and gone out for tour, if not for the pandemic. So, but, yeah, I mean, it's cool to see that, like, I think he really stands out on these records because he hasn't been there in a while, and he was probably real excited to get back with that rhythm section in this band again. So it's cool to hear him, you know, just do his thing, because again, you know, there are very few guitarists like him that are in that realm of creativity where it's like he can do the funk guitar, but he's also like doing all this kind of like acid rock, experimental, noisy kind of discordant stuff in there in the solos too. And, you know, he's getting like, he's got a little bit of lead vocals on these records and harmonies and stuff. So it's definitely cool to have him back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure. So I wanted to talk about the influence of Rick Rubin. And I know where you're going to go with this, because the one album that you weren't necessarily a huge fan of that you had ranked that we already talked about was The Getaway. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the few that Rick Rubin did not produce of the Chili Peppers. So like, we cannot talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers without talking about Rick Rubin's influence, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I mentioned, and it's like, and I don't know, this is pure speculation on my part, but like, I mentioned that there's a couple songs with kind of like these almost retro sort of drum machine sounds on the new album. And I was like, to me, that kind of makes me think about the fact that, you know, Rick Rubin was a trailblazer in a lot of those kind of like hip hop sounds and drum machines. So I was like, it makes me wonder, like, did he get out his drum machine and do those tracks, or was that something the band put together? I have no idea. But it's interesting because Rick Rubin is this guy who, when he's not making beats, when he's not doing like 99 Problems for Jay-Z, or he's not like doing licensed deal stuff like that, a lot of times as a rock producer, he's known for being kind of like, he's this guy who like sits on the couch and gives them thumbs up, gives them thumbs down, maybe talks to Anthony about lyrics or something. So he's seen as kind of this like, it's his taste or his counsel. You know, he's the guy who told Kanye to make Yeezus shorter and to simplify the songs. Mm-hmm. So things like that, where he's like pushing people in a creative direction, mm-hmm. but he's not necessarily getting into like how they're miking the drums right. or the key changes in the songs, because he's not a trained musician. He's a beat maker, you know,
yeah.
But he's a guy who loves rock music and has done these amazing records with like Tom Petty and Slayer. So it's like mm-hmm. he gets results when he, I think he has chemistry with the band. But there's also been a few bands he's worked with where they're kind of like, yeah, Rick Rubin charges a lot of money and doesn't do much. He just kind of sits there and, you know, says this is good, or drops by the studio for a bit, where, you know, a lot of people I think are used to, you know, someone who's a musician. Like a lot of these bands might want someone like Brendan O'Brien, who's like a musician and can mm-hmm. go in there and help them, you know, foster the environment of like, you know, deconstructing the song from a, you know, chord standpoint or from, you know, song structure standpoint, where I don't think Rick Rubin necessarily does that. So it's interesting that I think, you know, Rick Rubin gets criticized for not being a musician kind of producer, but I think when he has chemistry, which he obviously does with Red Hot Chili Peppers, that's when he gets, you know, great results.
And now this album that I almost accidentally skipped over it, and a lot of people probably will, because it came after Californication, and it's really tough to top Californication, but an album mm-hmm. that, you know, in hindsight, you know, as I've grown older, I felt like it was kind of top heavy. And I'm talking about the album released in 2002 by the Chili Peppers called By the Way. Very great songs towards the top of it. And I think it just, mm-hmm. it was a little bit too Beastie Boy for me. And I think you even mentioned that it was, I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of the album in its entirety. Definitely some fun songs on it, like Can't Stop. Couldn't imagine seeing that live, would go absolutely crazy. But this is an album, you had this at number 9 on your list. Talk about By the Way.
That was one where I kept trying to find a way to get it higher. Cause honestly, like you said, I think it is like the top heavy, you remember the singles, you know, so we remember the other songs, mm-hmm. but like by the way, the title track, I think is one of their best songs ever. I would put that in like their top 5 songs. Mm-hmm. Cause it has the melodic side of like the Californication songs, you know, but it's like, it also has these great fast instrumental bits. So it's just such a cool fusion of what they do well. And there's some other great songs. I think in the thing I called it like their prettiest album, because there's like these really beautiful melodic things. It's very like a psychedelic, you know, it sounds like they could have been listening to like the Grateful Dead or something when they made this album. So it's definitely, it's a cool album. And I thought about, you know, if it wasn't something where like Stadium Arcadium was a much bigger album and in some ways a much more revered album, I might push, you know, By the Way up a couple spots or something. But it's one of those things where, again, it's like at the end of the day, you are just trying to say, you know, okay, what's at the top, what's in the middle, what's at the bottom. And mm-hmm. even like the, you know, I ranked their debut album last, and I don't think that's a bad album. It's just like, mm-hmm. I just wish they had the whole founding lineup on it, you know?
Yeah. There's always at least one thing. And then with By the Way, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that there was some great songs. I mean, one of the most underrated songs from By the Way was Cabron. Definitely one of my favorites. Yes, love Cabron. One of my personal favorite underrated cuts. But by the way, you had a number nine. Now we got to get to the top two. A lot of people's top two probably for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Let's start with Californication.
And if you want these kind of dreams, it's Californication. It's the edge of the world in all of Western civilization. The sun may rise in the east, at least it's settled in a final location. It's understood that Hollywood sells Californication.
Mainstream album. I think this is where, you know, if you ask, you know, the normal music fan, name one song by Red Hot Chili Peppers, they're probably going to say Californication first, right? Yeah, an album by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, they're probably going to say Californication. Great songs on this one, obviously, as well. Scar Tissue, Other Side, obviously self-titled Californication. Around the World, though. Oh, man, as a hip-hop fan, I love that one. Definitely some hip-hop influence on that one. And I think one is called Get on Top as well. But definitely another great album. I mean, there's a reason why this one was nominated and won awards. But Californication by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, you didn't have it at number one, but you had it at number two.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's like Blood Sugar Sex Magik is the definitive one, but Californication, again, huge record, huge hits. And I think also you have to look at, you know, a lot of the bands that became huge multi-platinum bands in like the first half of the 90s never got back to that point. Like, you know, if you look after 1995, after that point, you know, it's like Pearl Jam doesn't have an album that's as big as 10. Soundgarden never had another album as big as like Super Unknown. Mm-hmm. And a lot of bands, you know, kept going and have some hits, but it's like when of the bands that got big, the only ones that really came back to the level and had like an album that sold like 5 or 6 or 7 million copies were Red Hot Chili Peppers with Californication and Green Day with American Idiot. Those are the two bands, I think, of the 90s rock wave that came back as big as they'd ever been after that, you know, Lollapalooza era, you know? So, So I think that's very notable. It's like, you know, they were one of those bands where said, okay, we got Frusciante back. We have these amazing melodic songs. It's a new era, and they totally brought another generation along with them. So that's rare.
Yeah, and speaking of rare, you know, we definitely, you know, speaking of Californication, and I wanted to kind of ask you this, and one of the rare things that I appreciate on Californication that a lot of people don't really seem to mention, Anthony's vocals on Californication, I think, were one of the best of his performances on the rest of the albums. Would you say so?
Absolutely. I think I called it, like, his best album as a lyricist, but might be his best album as a singer, too, because he has that nice balance of where you know, when he needs to flow like a rapper, he can. When he's really singing melodically, he does that great too.
So we got the number one. We're at number one. Blood Sugar Sex Magik, you got it at number one. 1991, this album was released. I was 1 year old. But you know, I mean, we all go back and listen to these classic albums. I would have had this would be in my top three. I would have had Stadium Arcadium 1. I would have Californication 2, and then I would have this at number 3. But, hey, Blood Sugar Sex Magik, definitely. I think a lot of people would have this number 1. But Al Shipley, of course, you got this fantastic article. And, of course, if anybody's listening to this right now, you want to dig a little bit deeper, scroll on down in the description, click the link, do yourself a favor, and dig into the Red Hot Chili Peppers discography and these great rankings. But number one, Blood Sugar Sex Magik. I mean, give it away. I mean, let's start there. One of their, again, one of their best songs ever. Suck My Kiss, one of their best songs ever. I mean, they were on top of their game with this one. So there's a lot of reason why you have this number one, but I'll let you, I give you the floor. I mean, there's many reasons why this could be number one, but what's your reason?
I mean, like, you know, I was, I'm a little older, so I was like 10 years old when that album was out and it was big. And, you know, you gotta remember that album came out the same day as Nevermind, but they didn't get overshadowed. They came out and were just as big as Nirvana, really, when you look at those two albums. And I remember, like, being in my backyard with my brother listening to that album. It was just so much fun, especially back then. There was so much great music coming out, but it wasn't necessarily fun. Like, you know, Nirvana, Metallica could be fun to listen to, but it wasn't like upbeat, funky, weird things like Red Hot Chili Peppers doing. So they really had like this great, they had their own lane at that time. And it was exciting to have them in there with all the big grunge bands and to have a band like that out there too. So for me, it's like I just have memories of when that album was new, and like, and also just hearing things like Breaking the Girl and being amazed by that, like just from a percussion standpoint as a drummer, I think that song's incredible. So yeah, I mean, that's just a cool album because they just, again, it was their first really long 70-minute album, and it just felt like they threw everything at the wall. They tried everything. It was a very adventurous album.
And great songs all the way through. I mean, Under the Bridge, I don't even think we mentioned that. I mean, that's Under the Bridge is huge. I mean, and that's a whole different, and I think that's what I like the most about this album was this was one of the few albums where it was different sounds and like almost different genres all the way across this album. I feel like this was one that where they experimented a little bit and got great results. I mean, my personal favorite, I guess, would be looked at, not really underrated, but a lot of people, you know, talk about Suck My Kiss and Give It Away and Under the Bridge. But mine, I love I Could Have Lied. That is my favorite, one of my favorite songs from this album. You had it number one. What did you think of I Could Have Lied? Is that one you liked as well?
Yeah, that's a good one. What I think is amazing about this album is that they made Soul to Squeeze when they were recording this album, and they didn't even use it. It came out on a soundtrack later. So to have an outtake as good as Soul to Squeeze when you have 17 songs on the album, that's how you know an album's great.
And you had it number one. So these great rankings, again, scroll on down in the description. Red Hot Chili Peppers, and we could obviously keep going forever. But again, if anybody's listening right now, check out the new album as well. We definitely can't talk about the old music without promoting their new stuff. Shantae's back. The band is back. Return of the Dream Canteen is out everywhere right now. And once again, I'll give you the floor because you did a much better job at explaining this album. The only way I can explain it is if you're a Red Hot Chili Peppers fan from the early days, the 90s, you're going to love this album. You love the band. I think this is the best album they have released in a long time. But I'll give you one more time. Promote Return of the Dream Canteen. I guess we're helping them out. We're helping them sell this album because I am a huge fan of Return of the Dream Canteen.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, once a band's had a dozen albums, even if you love them, you might not check out every album. You might have missed the one they released earlier this year, but I would say even if you skip that one, I would check out this one because it definitely does have, like, just a lot of great sounds. Again, it's like it's a little adventurous. It's got a little bit of drum machine stuff, but it's also got a lot of the band just jamming. It just feels like they had a great feeling on this, and it's like they almost wanted to have, like, the second album of these two be a little more up-tempo. So, yeah, it's a really fun record with a lot of great, like, guitar solos and stuff.
Al Shipley joining us here on the Music Vibes podcast. Cannot bring you on without promoting some other work or other things that you got going right now. Always love having fellow music journalists join the show, and always love promoting work because nobody works harder than music journalists. You guys are always grinding, always working. So what can you promote? What are you working on, and what can people look forward to from Al Shipley?
I would say you can always look at my blog, Narrowcast, which is at narrowcast.blogspot.com. I'm always writing things for Spin. I've got a couple more like album ranking things coming out pretty soon, so keep an eye out for those. I'm doing a lot of things here in Maryland with the Baltimore Banner, which is a new daily news site, covering a lot of local music there. So I would say, you know, just keep an eye out. Follow me on Twitter at Al Shipley.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Al, thank you so much for joining the show once again. So easy to talk to you, man. Definitely going to consider. There's no budget, but I'm considering making you a co-host. You do that good when you come on the podcast. You always do great work, and always appreciate you coming on, man. Great stuff.
All right, anytime, man.
Time Travel with DC Hendrix on the Music Vibes Podcast. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify on your mobile device.
Podcasts by Federated Media.